Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I'm your host for The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share advice for techies, for earth lovers, and for penny pinchers. As much as I love the sound of my own voice, this broadcast is going to rely heavily on guests who are subject matter experts on everything, ranging from how to get your small business up and running, interviews with some of the brains behind your favorite apps, and even how to remove garbage from outer space. You never know who's going to pop up and join me next in studio, so make sure to subscribe to The Town Hall on iTunes to get our episodes downloaded directly. And if your boss is making you work through lunch or your commute is just too short and you miss something awesome, don't worry, we've got your back. You can check out our blog for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another very exciting and special episode of The Town Hall. If you can tell by the acoustics, I'm not in the studio and I'm not via Skype. I'm in the development office at Serenb. And I won't explain what Serenb is. I'll let my guests do that. And I'm hanging out today with Steve Nygren, the founder of Serenb. So, Steve, thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Thank you for your interest.
Let's start off easy. Even before we go and do your background and your personal and professional timeline, how do you describe Serenb to someone who's completely unfamiliar with the concept? You're in an elevator with a stranger. They ask you, what do you do? What do you say?
Well, Serenb is a community, very much like communities were built 80, 100 years ago, where everything is clustered together. Their houses are close. The porches are pulled close to the sidewalk. And neighbors know neighbors.
I love that. Steve and I have known each other for a while now because I am also a proud Serenb resident, and this interview is extremely convenient for me. And without Steve, you know, I wouldn't have the rich and fulfilling life down here in Serenb. I wouldn't have, you know, this close group of friends are now I feel, and I wouldn't have even met my fiance if it wasn't for Steve. So, you know, I'm pretty familiar with your background, and a lot of our listeners may not be. So how does someone start a town? I mean, how did all of this come to fruition? Take me through the timeline.
Well, number one.
And no need to be brief, because this is like a story that deserves to be told.
Well, number one, I'm a hospitality guy. And so any Atlanta listeners who have been here for a lot of years would know the peasant restaurants and mixed restaurants. I was growing those around the country. We bought a farm southwest of the city just on an afternoon whim. Our children were 3, 5, and 7. This was in 1991. And I had no idea how that was going to change our lives. I thought we'd come out a couple times. It was a great investment being this close to Atlanta. And I found the family wanted to come every weekend and every vacation. And watching my children touch back into nature was life-changing for me. And it changed my value system. After doing this for 3 years, I sold my company. We had 34 restaurants around the country. We sold the big house in Ansley Park and moved here and started restoring the old 1905 farmhouse for our personal residence. Then in my 7th year of retirement, we became concerned that urban sprawl, all those things that we'd gotten away from, were actually going to send their tentacles out this way and change our rural lifestyle. And we love being so close to Atlanta. We are able to take advantage of everything Atlanta has, but yet we live out here in this wonderful rural atmosphere. My initial reaction, like so many people, is to start buying more things to protect your area. And so I bought more and more land. And in 900 acres, I realized that I couldn't buy enough to protect us. And so we started looking at what were the real issues. A dear friend was Ray Anderson. One of the big environmentalists, founder of Interface Carpet, and he was the first White House, the chair of the White House Council on the Environment. And so at dinner one night, I said, Ray, you know all the smart people. Who can help me figure out how to keep this area from being disturbed? And Ray asked the Rocky Mountain Institute to help. And so in September of 2000, they brought 23 thought leaders here for a 2-day discussion. Georgia Tech documented this because these were really some of the big voices of the day. Well, that 2-day session frustrated me more than solved my problems, because it was really the discussion of what some of the real serious issues were. Now, to put things in perspective, in September of 2000, the first LEED building hadn't been certified. We were, you know, talking about air and land and energy conservation. was really not the forefront that it is today. And while there's still a lot of work to be done, we really kind of know the issues and know what some of the solutions might be. And we realized that if we just tried to do a model here, that most models actually ended up being a catalyst for change, or catalyst to destroy an area, to disturb it faster. And so we stepped back and spent 2 years bringing 500 landowners together to collectively as a community look at this. Now, this was pro-development, pro-preservation people, the ones that you normally find fighting at the zoning meetings. We were able to bring them together over food. We always had some sort of food at any meeting, no matter its size. And we were able to bring together a model to where we could develop and preserve at the same time. We used the countryside of England as our model because after World War II, they couldn't afford to disturb the island and indulge in urban sprawl like the rest of the world has. And so those were great. That was the end result. Now, it was quite a trick bringing English land law to a southern property rights state. But working with the University of Georgia, Texas A&M, we were able to form legislation and zoning laws that were passed unanimously by Fulton County in 2002. We found one of the tools we needed was transfer development rights, which the state of Georgia did not have. And University of Georgia, again, did the research, formed the legislation, and the Association of County Commissioners of Georgia carried that for us in the 2003 legislative session, passed that for all of Georgia.
Crazy.
And then local enabling legislation here. So with the foundations of rules, laws, and zoning in place, we broke ground on Serramee in 2004, and that's how it all started.
And how many residents live here now?
We're at about 700 because people are moving in every week.
It's crazy. It's crazy. You know, there are a lot of aspects of Serramee that kind of speak to the future. Private, like you said, privately protected green space and a focus on agriculture, different implementations of green building. What sparked your passion for environmental sustainability?
My wife, number one. We, you know, in the early 70s, we were raising our children with organic baby food and cloth diapers. And so it was a responsible thing. And I think we did not think that it was leading a path. It just made sense. And as I look back, I grew up in a generational rural Swedish community in Colorado. Since we've been there by various branches of the family since 1860s. And it was just the way you were to live. It wasn't thinking that we were picking up an environmental flag. This just made sense. It reminds me of several years ago when I was hiring a gardener. And of course, we maintain all organic gardens here. And so she really sounded great and the very person. And so then I just mentioned, well, you know, we maintain organic gardens. And she said, well, what is that? And so I said, well, we don't use chemicals, and started explaining. She's, oh, well, that's the way my grandmother taught me. You know, it wasn't a movement that she was part of. It's just the way you should be doing it.
I love that. Let's talk about the neighborhoods. Each neighborhood or hamlet, as they're called here, is designed with a specific orientation in mind. So walk me through each hamlet and what makes it so unique and tethered to its theme.
Well, when we started thinking about the fact that we were actually going to build a community, actually a town, what were the components? Now, we already understood that connection to nature was an important piece. So our zoning laws require 70% of the land in this 40,000 acres be preserved, and you move all the clustering into the 30%. So that connects you to nature and to one another. And now we're seeing a lot of research on health and wellness that says two of the most important pieces is connection to nature and connection to other people. Yeah, we have been building places that separate us from those two things for the last several decades. So having nature and connecting to people is the foundation. And a lot of things we do in general, like where we put the post boxes and the porches pulled forward and a lot of things. Then what are the other key components that really lead to a vital, engaged life? Art is clearly one of those. being in Atlanta and seeing how arts organizations struggled, yet how much they gave back to the community, we realized that was one of the important things we wanted to lead with. And so we formed the Serenby Institute for Art and Environmental Education. 1% transfer fee from every house sold now and forever will go to fund that institute. And so we wanted to put policy as well as an importance. Now, if you come to Selborne, which is what the first community is called, the history of that through our relationship with a dear friend in England. But Selborne, it has a focus of art. If you look at the streetlights, the trash cans, the benches, it is to commission artists to design them and employ craftsmen to make them. So we're walking the talk in that we feel art's important in every level. So you'll see there's murals on buildings, there's pieces of sculpture down various avenues, and every street line is really a piece of art. Some of the buildings are built for artists in mind. For instance, the Mondrian across the street from where we're sitting, that's set up so you can have your little art studio, antique studio, whatever it is in the front. But there are big doors that open to your garage. And it's designed in such a way that on the weekend you could put your car in one of the remote parking lots, open the doors, and that courtyard could become an artist market. Now, while that was one of the early buildings, there are not artists in every one of the spaces, but I believe as Serenby builds out, that will gradually happen because that's the physical place that's been built for that.
Right.
We encourage the art galleries, the art schools to come here. Then you have the second major hamlet is Grange.
That's where I live.
Yes. And you're in one of the wonderful pocket little communities that we have within Grange.
Yes.
But there's a focus on agriculture. And this is where we have so stepped away from where our actual food comes from. And we pulled the farms right up to the edge of the houses, or the houses right to the edge of the farm.
It really is like in my backyard. It's wild.
You can watch the farmers. You wave to them.
You
know the farmers. The kids know the farmers. They see the seasonality.
And that's another big thing, too, is the farmers also use as a means of education, right? To do stuff with the kids and on the weekends. And
We educate the community and visiting children as well. We're growing farmers as well as vegetables.
I love that.
It is a teaching farm to where we can launch other people that want to get into farming. But here again, we take it deep into the community. So 70% of our common area is edible landscaping, blueberry bushes at every crosswalk. And you see what that does to the culture of a community is the blueberries are coming in season, and the kids are watching them. Kids at Serenby understand that seasonality, that when the service berries come in the spring, that's the first thing, and they know that it's a few weeks till the blueberries come. And following the blueberries are going to be the figs. And following the figs are the apples and the plum trees, and then the nuts and all of the final things. So they really understand that seasonality in a very natural way.
I love that. Whenever I pull in on my way home, especially over the spring and summer, I would roll down my window and stick my arm out and pick a couple berries. It's like a drive-thru. It's much healthier drive-thru option for me. Serenby's a lot more than just the neighborhoods themselves. You know, we touched on it a little bit. The culture is so, you know, vibrant, and that's what really, in my opinion, makes the life here. So tell me a bit about how you curate a culture. It's one thing to buy the land and build it, but how do you nourish the people that live within it? You know, whether that be the restaurants, the theater program, the retail, what does that process look like?
Well, and that leads to the focus of our third community that we're in the middle of building, which is health and wellness. And so while if you live any place, you're interested in the arts generally, you want fresh food. And then what are the physical components that bring health and wellness? And so we really started looking at that. We're putting physical things in there. We're going to be opening our first office building with a lot of practitioners that are about keeping you healthy and vital, not to fix you once you're sick. And so that's very different than what people might think of a health building being. And how do you, to your question, how do you curate this? I believe if we create beautiful places, that are interesting. People gravitate to there that have hope that our society can be very different. And we live, I think, in a today that a lot of people have given up hope, and we have a lot of sarcasm. And so by building a place that actually emulates or feels, you just walk down the street and you have a better feeling. Many people mention this. You walk down the streets in Serenby, people are waving. They look in your eyes. They're smiling. And it just changes and builds on itself. So I think beauty is a key component of this. And in fact, I was visiting with the folks that did Blue Zone, and we were talking about some of the components, and they did not call out beauty. And I was very curious about that, because every place that they cite around the world is beautiful. And I think it's one of those components that we do not pay attention to. And you look at a lot of the places being built today, I would not step back in 10 years and say, wow, what a beautiful place.
Right. Speaking of beauty, and I, you know, my head's running a mile a minute. I have just so many questions I want to ask you. And normally a lot of times I'll do a lot of research and come up with some bulleted points. But really the only thing that I had was like, let's just tell the Serenby story and like hit all of those. But besides the land preservation of the farm, there are a number of environmental initiatives that are actually harder to see, including geothermal heating and cooling for the newer neighborhoods, requiring all of the homes to be Earthcraft certified, and our own wastewater treatment plant that employs natural methods to treat wastewater, turn into gray water, and use that for irrigation. Can you talk about the wastewater treatment system and what makes that so unique to Serenby?
Certainly. Because of the thought leaders that came here through the Rocky Mountain Institute, we were at the forefront of many of these initiatives. One of those participants was John Todd, the creator of the Living Machine, and fairly famous in the academic world about water conservation and treating the wastewater. So, of course, we said we wanted to move forward with something along that that line. John came back, brought a man named Michael Ogden from New Mexico at the time, and we started talking about what a really responsible wastewater treatment system would be. It is a matter of holding solids. Now, here we're getting technical.
Yeah.
it's holding solids in tanks near where they are deposited. And then if you keep those tanks environmentally sound, so that means you don't have a garbage disposal that puts fats down into it. You don't use leaches that are going to kill the normal bacteria. Then there is only a 2-inch line from these tanks, and some are big, huge for multiple areas, and others can be individual for a house. The effluent, the liquids, are then by gravity flow go to a series of constructed wetlands. These constructed wetlands are all controlled by a computer system that moves the effluent from cell to cell of various levels of gravel and then plant material that roots are going down into it. And then from there, it's moved over by gravity into a sand pit. And then it's pretty close to drinking water, although because of how we do it, people, we can't get that permit. But if someone were to drink water, I would not be nearly as concerned as I think some of our drinking water, because there's so much in it.
It's a very cool representation of how a circular, you know, economy in a circular system can work. One of my favorite parts about living here, and we talked about it a little bit, is obviously the access and education to fresh and organic food. I mean, I feel like that's a no-brainer if you're going to create a community like this. You said it, you know, you would eat during every meeting. Food's really important. Food brings neighbors together, you know, food brings families together. And I mean, it's literally my backyard. And each weekend I pick up a bevy of fresh produce and go home and cook at our house. And it's incredible. And a lot of times you hear that buzzword that a lot of people overuse, farm to table. And here it, you know, rings true. But besides the obvious, what are some of the benefits to having a community focus on sustainable agriculture that we may not think about?
Well, I think it's the education of people for what they're putting into their bodies. We have disconnected from from that. We wonder why we have obesity, malnutrition in the same body. It's because we are consuming things that really are not food, and we put the wrong label on it. A lot of people try the opt-out that they can't afford organic food, yet when you really look at it, it's not that expensive. You see what your CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, you pay the farmer up front, which is what you're talking about, and you go once a week to collect your harvest for that week. I think it's less than, what, $5.50 a day, and that's enough vegetables to feed a family of four generally. Now, we have now partnered with Will Harris, so we can also offer organic proteins of whatever is being butchered. And while you read various things about meats and whether you should eat or not, the key thing is if you have meats that are not susceptible to all these hormones and everything else, then it's perfectly part of what our body is. So if you have fresh proteins and fresh vegetables and fruits, it totally changes how you feel.
And a lot of the restaurants use those materials.
You're going to live longer. You're going to live healthier to whatever age you do live to.
In the last year, you know, I do want to take a second to say that Rubicon and Serenbe have partnered up to not only manage, you know, Serenbe's waste and recycling, but to continue to aid in the core value of education. Like we were just talking about educating the residents about proper recycling and Serenbe educating us on unique methods of pickup. And I say unique because all of the trash cans here are in ground as to not disrupt the beauty like we were talking about. What are some other small details that people may not notice at first, but are big departures from the norm of a community? We talked about, you know, mailboxes and street lamps and stuff, but, you know, you think about how every detail of this was planned. What are some of those little nuggets for you that are just really unique in the community?
Well, first of all, you mentioned Rubicon. I'm delighted now that partnership, because that's been a struggle to actually bring about what we want to do with that. And a lot of times it's that person who we're going to sell those recyclable tubes, and what is that complete string? So, and in America, that's a difficult thing. So we appreciate that partnership. You mentioned the trash cans being in the ground. That was for several reasons. One is we didn't want to pollute the curbs with those Herbie Kirby's that people forget to take in when they go on vacation for a week, and it really pollutes the area. And then there's noise pollution with that big truck coming down the street going beep beep at 6 o'clock in the morning. So there was dealing with both visual and noise pollution. Geothermal led to that same reason, because not only was it energy saving, a geothermal system is silent. And when you look at the density that we have, some of the courtyards and what have you, if there was a outside compressor going spring and fall, that would change the atmosphere. And so we, I believe as a society, we think we're putting up with these visual and noise pollutants. But if you look at how depressed we are and anxious as a society, and that depressions have increased fourfold each decade for the last two decades. So we're really not locking these things out. Our mind is just adapting because we think there's no choice.
Right.
And if there's anything that Serenbe indicates, is there are choices. And you don't have to be out here in the woods. This can happen in any neighborhood, no matter where it is. And that's what we're excited now, that a lot of the things, whether it's health, whether it's the economics of conserving resources, is now becoming more mainstream in interest. And so we're getting numerous communities, literally from around the world, coming to understand what we're doing. So that's a pretty exciting part.
Very, very exciting. I've been coming down here for like a year and a half, and I went and had a physical, my blood pressure's lowered. And, you know, Steve, I will thank you for that for sure. I wanted to play a quick game with you before I let you get back to work. And it's called Rapid Fire. It's just 10 questions that I'm going to ask you to say the first thing that comes to your mind. Okay.
Okay.
What is the last concert that you went to?
The last concert? Let's see. It was Sunday night at the Oak Room. And that was, what was the name? It was Saturday night. It was Saturday night. I took my grandson. The Oak Room had a trio of jazz and punk which was an amazing thing. And then Deb Bowen was doing a Christmas cabaret concert at Grange Hall. So I was able to walk to two big city kind of musical events right here at Serenby with my 2.5-year-old grandson.
What's the first concert you ever went to?
First concert? Gosh, you see how much gray hair I have. I can't remember.
Fair. What are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? A couple things. Phil Tabb just has a brand new book out. What's the name of that? It's a whole thing about, I don't remember things. It's part of the sacred geometry in building communities. And Phil Tabb is our designer. He just gave it to me. And so that's sitting on my nightstand. I picked up Michelle Obama's from my view. And it's sitting, you know, unfortunately, I have several books sitting on my nightstand. Somehow I think they're going to absorb while I sleep. I'm running out of time to actually sit and read.
The Greening of Architecture?
The Greening of Architecture.
Yeah. There you go. What's the first thing you do when you get up in the morning?
First thing I do is stretch and fix a cup of tea.
What is your go-to restaurant in the city of Atlanta?
Well, I don't know that there's a go-to. You know, being in the hospitality industry, it depends on what mood you're in.
You're in the mood for... I'm just kidding. I know. I thought about that. I was like, he can't pick a favorite.
It's like children, you know, you like different things.
Fair.
Them, but you can't have a favorite.
Fair. If someone were to make a movie about Serenby, which actor, dead or alive, would you cast to play you?
Oh, isn't that interesting? Dead or alive?
And then I'll tell you who I think should play you.
Who should play? Well, if it's now, it's... Boy, you stumped me. Usually, you know, when she said, tell us any first thing in your mind, I never have problems with you.
I think Clint Eastwood.
You have stumped me time and time again here on this.
Good stuff. I think Clint Eastwood should play you.
Well, if it were Robert Redford, a lot younger, I might say that.
There you go.
He has a lot of the same environmental energy around him.
Yeah, Leo DiCaprio. There are a bunch of guys that could play you. I hope I don't stump you on this one. So Serenby, at its heart, is all about family. All of your kids and their spouses have, you know, major roles within the business of Serenby. What is one piece of advice you'd give someone who's running a business, big or small, with their own family?
Well, the biggest thing is not to invest in an imagined outcome for you. When I sold my restaurant company, a lot of friends said, oh, how unfair to your children. Well, my children were young. They were, you know, in middle school at best. And I said, you know, I'm not going to try to put a yoke around the neck of my kids. And so the biggest advice is let them fly. We never had any expectations. I never expected them to come back. They all went to schools outside the Southeast. We're guardian at Cornell, met your fiance.
Yep.
And so because there were no strings, they all felt very free to come back.
That's good advice. When you were little, what did you want to be when you grew up?
An architect.
Well, there you go. Where do you see Serenby in 5 years?
I'm always careful to see where I am. You know, the only way I'm going to keep my hair is not to have invest in the outcome. But I believe we're on a steady growth as more people see that a lot of the things that we looked like crazy 18 years ago are now coming forward, whether it's research, whether it's lifestyle, whether it's health and wellness or conserving the energy. You know, why not build a environmentally responsible house if it's going to change your cash flow at the end of every month and you're going to have more money in your checking account? I mean, these are just, I don't care where your beliefs are about the environment. This is common sense things about the health of your family and the cash flow you have in your bank. And so I believe that this is going to become more mainstream as people understand that. And Serenby is going to continue to grow at a higher velocity, is what we're showing. And we're going to continue to be a model influencing other places.
And lastly, Steve, what does success mean to you?
Success is that I've had a good day.
I love that. You know, when you're at a party and you have invited like a lot of different groups of friends and you see them all mixing and mingling, and you get that like warm, tingling feeling when you see your worlds colliding. That's what I'm feeling right now. And I love it. Steve, Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk with me and for your vision. And I really couldn't imagine living anywhere else.
Well, thank you. We love having you and Michael right here. And look forward to the future.
When we have kids.